We've never lost an election. We're winning this election.
That is the stance that has led to a unique political situation in the United States. It's Thursday, December 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a warning about no quick end to the COVID pandemic, even with the vaccine. Australia might soon require technology firms like Google and Facebook to pay for journalism. We go to Hong Kong to talk about continuing arrests of protesters. And in Bangladesh, controversy over a Rohingya move to a new island. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump has now lost dozens of post-election lawsuits aimed at overturning President-elect Joe Biden's victory. As the president's legal challenges fail in court, December 8th marked the safe harbor deadline, where states finalized certification of their election results, further limiting Trump's ability to contest it. White House correspondent Patsy Witakaswara has the latest.
In the 5 weeks since the November 3rd election, there have been celebrations,
USA! USA!
Protests.
It's a fraud. It's been stolen. Yes. It's been stolen. It was rigged.
And several state recounts and dozens of legal challenges over the election. And none of it has changed the result. Joe Biden won the 2020 election. But President Donald Trump is not ready to concede.
We've never lost an election. We're winning this election.
Aziz Haq is a professor of constitutional law at the University of Chicago.
The closing of the safe harbor is merely another nail on the coffin of the president's efforts to overturn the due result of the election in court through false claims of voter fraud.
Results finalized by the safe harbor date are considered to be conclusive by Congress. All states have certified except for Wisconsin, expected to certify later this week. John Fortier is the director for governmental studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
But if an election were certified after December 8th and electors were selected, as long as they were selected by the December 14th, when they actually cast their votes, Congress certainly could count those votes when they count the votes in January.
The president has mounted dozens of legal challenges in seven states where he lost: Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Nevada. He has won one lawsuit and lost more than 40, with several unresolved in Georgia, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court on Tuesday denied an appeal of a lower court ruling against a lawsuit seeking to overturn Pennsylvania's vote. As his legal team failed in courts, Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr also said there was no evidence of widespread fraud. But Trump supporters continue to threaten election officials, causing one of them, a Republican, to push back. Gabriel Sterling is the voting implementation manager in the state of Georgia.
It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language.
After losses in court, Trump has intervened by pressuring officials and legislators in Georgia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania to overturn the election results. Although these attempts failed, they expose vulnerabilities in the American electoral system. Aziz Haq from the University of Chicago.
Only time will tell whether what comes out of this election is a renewed commitment to the integrity of the electoral system, particularly at the level of the states, or what we've learned is how fragile our election system is, how close we've come to a really dangerous outcome.
On December 14th, the 538 people designated as the United States Electoral College will meet in cities across the country to formally cast ballots for president and vice president. Patsy Witakaswara, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. South Korean Foreign Minister's remarks about North's COVID-19 response sparks North Korea's anger. Indonesians begin to cast ballots in regional elections Wednesday, with health experts warning a huge turnout could see new coronavirus clusters emerge. The U.S. slams a new study on Afghan civilian casualties. A small coronavirus cluster in China's southern Chengdu city has prompted school closures and widespread testing. Libraries in Japan are hoping a machine that sterilizes books using ultraviolet light will reassure visitors seeking to take out publications during the pandemic. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Though the arrival of a vaccine appears imminent, experts are warning there will be no quick exit out of the coronavirus pandemic. Correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
Virtually every state has been reporting a surge in COVID-19. Nationwide, cases per day have eclipsed 200,000 on average, with the tally kept by Johns Hopkins University showing more than 215,000 yesterday, while more than 2,500 Americans died of infections. Yet health officials worry it could still get worse after many people disregarded warnings not to travel over Thanksgiving and have ignored other safety precautions. In California, where upward of 22,000 people have been testing positive each day, police arrested nearly 160 people over the weekend, many maskless, at a massive house party advertised on Instagram. I'm Ben Thomas.
Meanwhile, British health officials are warning the people with a significant history of allergic reaction should not receive the new coronavirus vaccine that was rolled out at a mass vaccination program Tuesday, pending investigation of two adverse reactions. Britain is the first Western country to begin the mass vaccinations, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Filipino nurse Leo Chiano works in Britain's National Health Service and was among the first to receive the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine.
I feel more confident and safe because I've been COVID positive before and I was admitted in the hospital. There is a thorough studies and research before the vaccine comes out, so I feel positive about it.
Colleague Ashley Lechemanint works in the Brighton Hospital's catering department. He's also received the vaccine.
We're going to defeat this coronavirus now, and that we're going to have a better... It's going to be a lot of new beginning.
Britain says no corners were cut in approving the safety of the vaccine and that it is 95% effective in stopping COVID-19 illness. Yet two healthcare workers suffered allergic reactions to the injection Wednesday, though doctors say they both had a history of allergies and this wasn't unusual. It's hoped 4 million doses will be given out before the end of the year. Those over 80, plus health workers and nursing home staff, are the first in line. It's not yet known if the vaccine only prevents illness from COVID-19 or if it will also prevent transmission of the virus, and that could prove key in tackling the pandemic. Those questions will be answered in the coming months. Many of those taking the vaccine have been self-isolating for several months. While there is palpable relief, Britain's chief medical officer Chris Whitty voiced a note of caution.
I want to be very clear, for the next 3 months we will not have sufficient protection. We're going through the most difficult time of year for respiratory infections.
Across Britain, hospitals are still admitting thousands of patients with COVID-19 and hundreds are still dying every day. There are fears that public adherence to social distancing and lockdown rules may fall as the vaccination program begins. Recent polls suggest half of Britons have safety concerns and one in three may refuse to take the vaccine. Back in Brighton, nurse Leo Chiano feels lucky to get the vaccine compared to friends and family in the Philippines.
Sometimes it's only the privileged people can have the vaccine back home. If you got money, if they're going to pay for it, if the government will provide for it, you know. But we don't know really. That's why we're hoping that it's going to be accessible to everyone.
It's hoped other promising vaccines will also soon be approved. Britain is off to a head start, and the government says it hopes life could be back to normal by the spring. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, The governor of South Korea's most populous province called for mass testing for coronavirus Wednesday as daily new cases centered in the densely populated Seoul area held at levels unseen since the outbreaks began earlier this year. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The Australian Parliament is due Wednesday to consider legislation that would require technology firms such as Google and Facebook to pay for journalism provided by news organizations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
For years, traditional media companies in Australia have complained that social media platforms benefit from their quality reporting without paying for it. The government in Canberra believes that regulation is needed and is introducing new legislation into Parliament. It's unlikely to pass until the new year. Australia wants tech heavyweights Google and Facebook to negotiate with broadcasters and publishers to agree how much they'll pay to use news stories online. The fee would be worked out by the two parties. If a deal can't be struck, both sides would be forced into arbitration, where a decision would be made for them. The only two digital platforms included so far are Google Search and Facebook Newsfeed, but Australian Treasurer Josh Frydenberg would have the power to add others to the list if they become big enough players in the market.
This is a huge reform. This is a world first, and the world is watching what happens here in Australia. But our legislation will help ensure that the rules of the digital world mirror the rules of the physical world.
The government says print media in Australia has seen advertising revenues fall by 75% since 2005. The market is dominated by Google and Facebook, which have opposed the legislation. They've argued that traditional media outlets have overlooked the benefit they receive from referrals and clicks through to their websites. Facebook has said previously it would remove Australian news content from its platform altogether, arguing it didn't contribute much to its revenue. The company also said it supported journalism in Australia through grants and funding. Facebook Australia said it would review the draft legislation when it was published. Google advertisements in Australia have insisted the laws would be damaging. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. The United States has blacklisted six companies, including several based in China, and four ships accused of illicit exports to North Korean coal. The U.S. action freezes any U.S. assets of those sanctioned and generally bars Americans from dealing with them. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Police in Hong Kong arrested eight more activists Tuesday over an anti-government protest in July. Reporter Rhea Mogul spoke with VOA's Steve Miller about it.
So Ted Hui, the one who's been making headlines the most, he is a former Democratic Party lawmaker, and all of the others are part of the opposition camp as well, who were heavily involved in last year's anti-government protests in Hong Kong. Now, Ted Hui and the others, they resigned along with the rest of their camp last month after Beijing voted out their colleagues out of LegCo. He was out on bail and awaiting trial on charges related to last year's anti-government protests. Ted, in particular, he left the city for Denmark last week with the court's permission to attend climate change meetings, only to announce later that he had decided to enter a self-imposed exile in the UK. And then shortly after his arrival there, he said that his bank accounts and those of his family members who bank with various banks in Hong Kong, including HSBC, Bank of China, and Hang Seng Bank, had been frozen. So there's several other lawmakers. Eddie Chu is one of them. Eddie was also part of the opposition. He posted on Twitter saying that he is out on bail and he has to appear in court again next in a few weeks' time.
Carrie Lam, the city's chief executive, came out and criticized Ted Hui for making comments about the banking system. Can you explain a little bit about what the rationale the authorities have given for freezing the assets?
Yeah, so the police have said that the reason they've frozen Ted Hui's bank accounts was to do with a money laundering sort of attempt that Ted Hui was involved with. Now, in a press conference yesterday in Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, our chief executive, attacked Ted Hui, stating that if any damage had been done to the financial sector, he was the one who did it. She said during this press conference, and I quote, that Hong Kong's monetary and financial systems are robust as ever. And she urged the public to question sort of the character of Ted Hui. And what we know so far is that the police are continuing to investigate.
Reporter Rhea Mogul speaking with VOA Steve Miller.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. For the past 3 years, most of the 700,000 Rohingyas who fled violence in Myanmar have been living in refugee camps in southern Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar. VOA's Muazzam Hussein Shakil covers the first group of Rohingya refugees being relocated to Bashan Char Island. Besan Hamdard narrates.
Since the Rohingya exodus from Myanmar, millions of Rohingyas were displaced in refugee camps in the region. Bangladesh's Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina told the United Nations in 2018 that there were roughly 1.1 million Rohingyas living in overcrowded refugee camps in Bangladesh. On Friday, more than 1,600 Rohingya refugees were relocated to Bashan Char, an island that rose from the sea less than two decades ago.
We like it here. We were provided assistance at our earlier shelter, and we hope to get assistance here as well.
After coming here from Cox's Bazar, we are getting everything as promised by the Prime Minister of Bangladesh.
Non-governmental organizations have begun working to provide humanitarian services to the Rohingyas in Bashan Char as Rohingyas prepare themselves to live there permanently. For the time being, they are provided ready-made food and have also been promised to receive daily necessities.
You can see a festive mood in all. We have prepared facilities to keep 100,000 homeless Rohingyas here. 22 NGOs are doing voluntary work to help settle Rohingyas here. Everything is going smooth.
Human rights activists believe the island is prone to floods and not safe for Rohingyas. However, the Bangladesh government disagrees.
Another wrong piece of information they were given is that the Bashan Char Island will sink, which is wrong. There are 75 islands surrounding this Bashan Char, and they have been there for a long time.
The relocated Rohingyas have been sending their updates to their relatives in Cox's Bazar. Bangladesh government will monitor the first wave of refugees and how well they do before relocating the next wave of Rohingyas. For Muazzam Hussein Shakil in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
This is VOA Asia. Those aboard a Royal Caribbean cruise to nowhere from Singapore were told to stay in their cabins Wednesday after a COVID-19 case was detected on board, forcing the Quantum of the Sea ship back to port. Libby Hogan reports.
One of those so-called cruises to nowhere
A much-hyped cruise trip with no destination port to keep with travel restrictions has apparently backfired because a COVID-19 case was found aboard one from Royal Caribbean and has now forced nearly 1,700 passengers into isolation. The cruise, which was only open to Singapore residents, was meant to be sailing just off the city state and planned no stops. Now the Quantum of the Sea ship has been forced back to port, authorities said. All passengers had cleared a mandatory test for the virus up to 3 days before the cruise started on Monday. But an infected passenger, an 83-year-old male, had reported to the onboard medical centre with diarrhoea, and passengers were told of the infection early on Wednesday. One passenger, Melvin Chu, described his shock hearing of the infection.
And given all these precautionary measures, it is quite uncanny or bizarre to actually find out that there actually is COVID patient on board.
Royal Caribbean and the Singapore Tourism Board said all guests and crew of the ship who had close contact with the infected guest had subsequently tested negative for the virus. The passengers and crew will stay on board in their rooms until contact tracing is complete. Then they will undergo mandatory COVID-19 testing before leaving the terminal. Singapore, which has had just over 58,000 cases and 29 deaths, has been reporting less than a handful of local infections in recent weeks.
That's correspondent Libby Hogan. We continue on VOA Asia. Driving While Black, Race, Space, and Mobility in America, a documentary by filmmaker Rick Burns and historian Gretchen Soren traces the racial profiling African Americans have encountered on the road since slavery. VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with the film's creators.
Driving While Black, a documentary by Rick Burns, chronicles the discrimination and violence African Americans have often encountered while driving.
In order to understand what's happening today, we felt strongly that you had to go all the way back to slavery, because that's the point where freedom is denied and mobility is denied.
The film documents how during the U.S. antebellum era, plantation owners employed slave patrols to monitor and punish slaves who tried to escape. It portrays these slave catchers as a precursor to white supremacists and some local sheriffs of the post-slavery Jim Crow era who targeted African-American motorists from the 1920s to the 1960s.
Liberty is locomotion. It was a form of self-empowerment. You drive, automobile. You get to go where you want, when you want, not sit in the back of the bus, but also an opening to a whole world of challenge as you now must navigate this spaces where African mobility is seen as worrisome and unpleasant and to be stopped by a large cohort of white Americans.
Perils grew for black motorists at night.
So one of the hazards of driving was encountering people who were less interested in you being in that particular neck of the woods. And I say neck of the woods, a neck in the woods, you know, watch out for, you know, being lynched or being harassed or terrified.
How do you navigate the segregated highways of America if you're an African American, where if your daughter needs to go to the bathroom, if you need to put gasoline in your automobile, if, God forbid, you have a medical emergency, where are you going to sleep? Where are you going to eat? Where are you going to get your hair done?
The Negro Motorist Green Book listed such places. It was published in 1936 by New York postal carrier Victor Hugo Green and put small African-American businesses across the country on the map. Eventually, says Rick Burns, the expansion of America's highways offered a level of protection to African-American drivers, giving them alternatives to state and local roads. However, the film shows African-American drivers continue to be racially profiled and disproportionately likely to be stopped by the police.
And so if people want to say, you know, what is this thing, structural racism, systemic racism, which has this kind of like abstract quality at first glance? It's not abstract. It's profoundly concrete.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.